Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome to the Politics Guys with your hosts, Jay Parson and Michael Baranowski.
Welcome to the Politics Guys. I'm Michael Baranowski, a political scientist at Northern Kentucky University. My co-host this week, as always, is Cleveland area attorney and sometime Republican strategist, Jay Carson. Here's our Ask the Politics Guys question for this week, Jay.
All right, fire away.
Why would anyone in their right mind vote for Donald Trump? Straight, wow. Succinct, to the all point. Right. And let me just start by addressing this from sort of a left-to-center position. Now, the first reaction that most people would have is no liberal would, in their right mind, would vote for Donald Trump. And that is probably, that would probably was my first inclination. But there actually is one very special case in which liberals might very much want to vote for Donald Trump. And that's if
tax the rich.
Well, no, I think the very special case would be if you are, say, a fairly extreme liberal and you believe that Donald Trump will be an unmitigated disaster and that this country needs an unmitigated disaster to sort of force the revolution. Well, then there you go. I mean, I know that and you laugh, and I certainly understand why. But this is, this is something you sometimes hear in Marxist circles, saying that things have to get really, really bad before we can totally upend the system. And pretty clearly, Bernie Sanders, his movement, while it's hugely popular with the segment of the population, isn't popular enough. Maybe things haven't gotten bad enough. If you really think that Donald Trump is going to make things awful, well, in the short term, maybe that awfulness is worth it, so that you can fundamentally change the system. It's not that outrageous of an argument, though certainly it is taking a huge risk, I would say. So that, to me, is probably
let it burn.
The liberal case for voting for Donald Trump. But I think, I think probably there are a lot more good conservative arguments for voting for Trump. And so I wanted to turn that over to you, Jay, and kind of get your sense.
Well, all right. First of all, I would characterize myself as not a Trump supporter. People probably realize that
from my comments on
the show. But as part of my training, it's to argue every side of a case, whether I necessarily believe in all of it personally myself. I mean, my urge is to look at the merits and make the best arguments possible. So that said, my argument for Trump is sort of like you said, I guess, maybe first and foremost, it's Hillary Clinton.
Right.
If you are a Republican and or conservative, the prospect of another Clinton presidency, especially Hillary Clinton presidency, is really daunting in terms of Supreme Court picks, in terms of her character. We talked on the show last week that, look, there's – Trump makes a lot of his funny nicknames and all that, but Crooked Hillary, that really does seem to sort of fit. And if you look at sort of the Hillary Clinton's greatest hits going back to the last 20-some years, I can't think of any other word to describe.
Well,
I can think of a lot of words, I suppose.
I wouldn't call her crooked, but I get your point.
Talking about vast right-wing conspiracies to savaging people who made accusations against her husband, to the cattle futures, to just goes on and on and on up through the email, to landing under fire in Kosovo. That's one of my favorites. You can watch the children, the video of the children, the cute ethnic costumes bringing her flowers.
I would say paranoid, vindictive Hillary, okay. Crooked Hillary, I would take issue with that in any significant way, but I get your point. Yeah, fair enough.
And the idea is that you could absolutely be sure, based on her past, that Hillary would abuse her power. You could be absolutely sure that she would appoint justices far to the left.
Let's focus on that point.
And Trump, Trump may abuse his power.
That's a pretty good chance.
Justices, but it's the idea is it's a sure thing, and Trump is the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
So that would be, I guess, the first and foremost conservative argument.
Now, to me,
Republican argument.
To me, the Supreme Court, that is the single best argument for conservatives to vote for Donald Trump, because it seems pretty clear to me that, well, seems certain to me that Hillary Clinton will appoint judges who are reliably liberal. And that's why I'm going to vote, you know, kind of hold my nose and vote for her, essentially. But it also seems to me that Donald Trump has pretty clearly indicated that whoever he appoints, they're going to be less liberal than who Hillary Clinton would appoint. So
there'll be some vetting and recommendations that are going to come from folks like what we said last week, from Heritage, from Federal Society, from, you know, he'll get the best people. He'll get the best people out there.
Yeah. And so they'll be tremendous. Yeah. I can see the logic saying, you know what, Donald Trump is going to be a disaster in terms of policy, but that's okay. Because probably, you know, there's going to be enough pushback in Congress. That's, we have a system set up to frustrate people like Donald Trump. So great. He'll be in. He'll be incredibly ineffective. Maybe we'll end up having to impeach and remove him. That's fine. But we'll get a conservative justice on the Supreme Court. And then we can move on from there. And so I totally get that argument. I think, again, it's taking a big risk, but I get that argument.
The other argument related to that would be that a President Trump, bad as he may be, would be more constrained than Hillary Clinton. So if you have a Trump, assuming you have a Republican majority in the House, because I think a Senate majority is still doubtful. And quite honestly, it might have been doubtful even if you had a nominee who wasn't Trump. But just because of the map. But there will be – you know, there are going to be a number of Republicans who will they would not give Trump a carte blanche in terms of policy and what he would do. You would have all the Democrats against him, and you would probably have a sizable number, or at least a not insignificant number, of Republicans who would also oppose him that he would have to work through, so that the damage would be let's say, you know, limited.
Yeah. Right.
My other argument for Donald Trump would be that while he is wrong on the solutions, he's right on the issues. When I say right on the issues, I mean right as in identifying what the issues are.
Yeah. I don't know that you
immigration is a huge, tremendous problem, and it has been for quite a while. Illegal immigration, I should say. And this is something that we have to deal with, as you know, and we've talked about this, and all the numbers show. Look, it's not all people coming across the border. Most of it are people overstaying visas, but border security is part of it. And you know, I think there needs to be steps taken to better secure the border. Now, whether that is a coast to coast 50-foot wall, I'm less sure that that's the best way to go.
Right.
But I don't think it's unreasonable to say, at least in certain parts of the border, there needs to be some sort of physical barrier, whether it's a wall, whether it's a fence, whether it's a moat, just a really big ditch. I don't know. But what I'm saying is there needs to be someone who can address border security. Because from the conservative standpoint, moving forward on the next step of the path to citizenship, which, again, I think is just something that's going to have to happen. That can't really happen realistically if you don't have the border security.
Yeah.
Now, some of another Trump idea, and again, he's sort of maybe right on the issue, but wrong on the solution.
Which is
kind
of
when
we're
talking about refugees from Iraq and Syria. You know, his solution was no Muslims until we figure what the hell's going on out over there. Obviously, a religious test is problematic for so many reasons. As applied to any American citizens, it would be unconstitutional. It would be almost impossible to enforce. It seems to be alien to our values and so forth. But saying something like we need to have more rigorous screening for people coming from certain countries – I don't think that's an unreasonable position, and I think given what we've seen in Europe, it's a very reasonable position. So, you know, it could be there's the one theory of Trump that he's a negotiator, and he will go into the negotiation asking for something that is absolutely crazy and unreasonable, knowing that he can't get it. So he goes in and says, look, I'm going to have a, you know, the 50-foot wall. It's going to be beautiful, knowing that that will never happen. And maybe we end up somewhere where we have other border security increases.
Right. Which is that basically the idea that he doesn't mean what he says.
If I'm arguing for Trump, that's one of the other things I'd argue.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I asked a conservative friend of mine. I have plenty of conservative friends, you being one
of
them.
Some of your best friends are conservative.
Exactly. this friend's a very smart guy, probably one of the smartest people I've ever known. And I said, can you – and he's a Trump supporter. And I said, can you explain to me? I really want to understand this. And he actually put together a pretty long response. And it started with this phrase. I'm sure you've heard it before. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And I said to him, well, you know, what do you mean by that? And when he expanded on it, he said, the thing is that nobody in power has made me richer, freer, or safer. And I don't think that they love America, not the way Donald Trump does. And what he meant by that, and when we kind of expanded on it, is that a lot of these, almost everyone in political life is part of this sort of new elite class, the sort of people who go to conferences in Davos and, you know, have sort of high class tastes and seem to be very concerned about and plugged into the elite.
Cultural elite.
Yeah, the cultural elite. Yeah, exactly. And that they certainly, they'll sometimes try to condescend to act like real people, but it comes off as fake because that's not really who they are. That's not how they spend their time. That's not where their thoughts go. They're not people who are watching, you know, Real Housewives or whatever. They're people watching whatever, you know, on PBS or something like that, if they even have a TV, right? And I think that disdain is something that a lot of folks feel very strongly. And maybe it would be nice to have a president who seems to really love real Americans who make up the vast majority of the country and who would never think in terms of flyover country. Now, I don't know if Donald Trump's that person or if he just is great at faking that sort of thing. But certainly, I certainly can understand that. I think, and certainly a lot of Republicans, right, have made the argument that the party has gotten corrupt. They focus way too much on lobbyists, political insiders, big money folks, and have ignored the grassroots. And this is their comeuppance.
Yeah, and that's sort of like the Jacksonian argument. Almost.
Yeah, absolutely. That we just need somebody to kind of come in and clean out the stables in a way, and someone who politics as usual has failed. And so, this idea that he doesn't have this experience. Of course, this is my great fear, is that he seems unhinged and doesn't have any experience. And the point that my friend made is, well, look at what very careful, rational, experienced people have done. They've led to a situation where in his mind is simply intolerable and continues to be intolerable. And it's worth trying something new, especially in a system where there are checks and balances, where, you know, measures could be taken if things get too far out of hand.
Yeah. I get my counterpoint, and I understand that the point of the question is we're supposed to argue for Trump. But yeah, again, the counterexample there would be Jesse Ventura in Minnesota.
Right.
Which was, let's bring in someone who has absolutely no group experience and see how.
Some wrestling experience, yeah.
But exactly. And, you could. This is tough because I keep going back to my more default position. The other piece to that, related to that, is that Donald Trump is sort of unaligned and doesn't owe anyone anything. He would come in with that sort of thing. He's a guy who is late in life. Would he run for a second term if elected? Well, probably, because he's Donald Trump. But he comes in sort of as a tabula rasa. There's nothing, and he's running more on a competence. And again, this is going to sound crazy, but hear me out. A campaign for I would provide competent leadership, management,
yeah.
as opposed to articulating one vision, ideological vision, versus another.
Yeah, we assume that this experience is a lot of prior political experience is necessary and a good thing and so forth, and that the political world can only work the way it's worked. And I tend to agree with that, but maybe that's not true. And, you know, a kind of a counter.
When you talk about things like the TSA or the VA or something like that, you know, maybe that's what you do need is you know, some guy managerial experience who can just make it run better. Yeah,
someone who's willing to do bold things. Like, for instance, when Ronald Reagan just fired the air traffic controllers, that was a big, bold move. And a lot of folks,
awesome.
You know, said was an important thing to do. You know, the counter example to Jesse Ventura, I would say, would be Arnold Schwarzenegger. Here was a guy who had absolutely no experience, but he came into office and what did he do? He made deals. He worked with the left. He was kind of a Republican, yeah, but in a lot of stuff, he really wasn't very doctrinaire. He didn't owe anyone really a whole lot of anything. And at least for a while, I got the sense that he, you know, made stuff happen and did some good things.
Well, the sense was, I think most people would say he did okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, you know, certainly we would hope that President Trump would be a lot more like Arnold Schwarzenegger than he would be like Jesse Ventura.
Yes.
I think most folks would say. So yeah, I think, you know, that another point I would say in favor of a Trump presidency, and some people have simply had it up to here with what they call political correctness. The idea that you can't tell a joke, you can't make a comment, you have to watch everything you say. There's been a lot of talk about this, especially on college campuses. There was a big thing in, I think it was the New Yorker, on stuff going on in Oberlin and so forth. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in academia about how, you know, conservatives and other groups are kind of, it's difficult to get a foothold. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for that. I get that. On the other hand, I'm a little uncomfortable with, you know, some of the stuff, more than a little uncomfortable with some of the stuff he says. But if you are the sort of person who feels this is a pressing issue, I'm not that person. But if you are that sort of person, it's weird. Like you were saying, it's hard for me to kind of make this case.
There's sort of a cultural message that he would send that maybe, you know, look, in sort of a New York or New Jersey kind of style, that, hey, maybe just everybody needs to grow a little thicker skin.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, imagine a Trump Christie administration. It'd be like, hey, you know, yeah. Screw well, you.
And people who talk about
it. That's, you know, yeah, just grow a little thicker skin. Get over it.
And people who talk about things like microaggressions and so forth. And that just rubs a lot of folks the wrong way. This idea that, well, you looked at me funny because I'm X. You know, it's exactly the response. A lot of people have is, well, suck it up and grow a pair. Now, I think I don't agree with that response, but I do think that some people who push various, programs, what you might call political correctness, can go too far and it can be an issue, though I don't think that's a problem that Donald Trump's the solution to.
I say I wouldn't disagree with that approach, the grow up and grow a pair, as you say. Although, oh my God, we're going to get an email on that, huh?
We might, yeah. again, this is. We should point out to everyone that this is our attempt to make a case for him.
I think that's a good message. Whether it's the president who ought to send that message is something different.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's, you know, there is sort of a dignity in the presidency that he would tend to lack. And, you know, I guess my final thought on this, and I was just, you know, kind of thinking about Trump, and people of a certain age might remember this, is Trump Andy Kaufman.
Wow.
In that.
That,
know,
came out of left field. Yeah. Okay. Like, expand on this.
No, Andy Kaufman, comedian, he was
wrestler.
On Taxi. And, but he went through this phase where he would make these public appearances and just be a complete jerk. He would go on David Letterman famously and just do all these outrageous things and challenge mm-hmm. wrestler Jerry Lawler to a fight. And he was just outrageous, ridiculous. And you never really knew. The sense was, okay, this is all just part of the act. But then again, maybe it isn't. And, you know, there was this weird sort of, you know, comedy based on making you feel uncomfortable almost because you didn't really know what,
right,
if it was part of the act or if it was the real thing. And maybe there is some of that in Donald Trump that, maybe it is a lot of this is just an act. It's just the for show. And beneath that, he's really, really smart. And, he's got a good brain.
It's tremendous. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you know, so that, you know, you send the message, look, this is, and quite honestly, liberals have done this for years, in terms of, you know, like we talked on the show last week, Hillary's telling a lot of lies, but we all know they're lies and we're comfortable with that. Or, you know, Obama, you know, saying he's marriage is between a man and a woman, wink, wink, where everyone knows that's not where they are. And maybe right. This is sort of the conservative response in that he's going to make these outrageous statements that will rile up a lot of people and get him elected. But people know that, you know, really he's not going to do these things.
I mean, I think that if you're tend to be a conservative person and you feel that the system is fundamentally broken, that, you know, saying, well, let's roll the dice and see what happens here because things are not getting better. I get that. I mean, I'm much more of an incrementalist. We've talked about this before. I'm kind of a Burkean conservative at heart. And so that approach is anathema to me. But I can see it. I think it's entirely wrongheaded and could be a disaster. But that's not an unreasonable argument to make, I don't think. And, you know, just say, I will not be voting for Donald Trump. But I think, you know, if people who do vote for him, I think in a way, this idea you get from a lot of the mainstream media that anyone who votes for Donald Trump must be either A, stupid, B, evil racist, or C, I think I'm on C, or C, must have some sort of psychological disorder. There was a thing in Politico about a few days ago about how this theory about how people don't understand their cognitive deficits explains how they vote for, why they would vote for Donald Trump. And, you know, I find that so incredibly insulting. And I think that's part of the problem, because as long as the establishment can't come to face the idea that they have, on both the left and the right, lost touch with the mass of voters, I think, and they keep on, you know, attributing this to people being mentally ill or crazy or ridiculously idealistic, that they're not going to address the fundamental problems within their own parties.
Yeah. And you know, we hit on this before, and I think you're exactly right. Are there racists out there who support Trump?
Sure.
Are there the vast majority? No. Are Trump supporters stupid? Some of them probably.
There are some stupid Hillary supporters. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's again, there is that sort of leftist, I should say leftist, but the left tends to push that narrative that they are the smart party and anyone is, you know, first of all, there's regular Republicans who are pretty dumb, but then there's the Trumpians who are really the,
right.
Really the worst of the worst. I think that's kind of offensive too. And Trump comes in from a lot of harassment, and we pick on him and make fun of him a lot on our show. But I want to make that clear that's not where I'm coming from. That all his supporters are stupid by any means. Because as you said, I know some smart people who are supporting Trump. I disagree with them, but
absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think that pretty much answers the question, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, as best we could.
Yeah, we're not natural Trump supporters, but I'd like to think we did a pretty good job. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Ask the Politics Guys. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you have any questions for future episodes, or you just have some thoughts, comments, even criticisms, we'd love to hear from you. And you can reach us through email, politicsguys@gmail.com. And, of course, on our Facebook page, where we also post stuff all throughout the week. That's facebook.com/politicsguyspage. Finally, if you're listening to us on iTunes, we would really appreciate it if you could take just a minute to rate the show, write a quick review. And finally, if you like what we're doing, want us to be able to keep on doing it, a donation of even a buck or two, the price of a Stanley Model 68-012 all-in-one screwdriver would really help. You'll find donation links on our site, politicsguys.com. Ask the Politics Guys will be back next Wednesday. We hope you'll join us.